Good morning, Colorado Springs. I'm Angela Jones, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to another brighter day in the neighborhood. Today, we have another employee spotlight, one of our newest bright and shining stars from Nashville, Tennessee, Wendy Rutherford.
Good morning.
Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you.
So I, our producer was just giving me a little rash about talking to country, and I'm like, I'm talking just like I normally do, and he's like, no, it's worse, and it's all your fault, I think.
You know, it happens. I don't know what to tell you. It happens. You go back to your roots eventually.
Eventually. I think I know it's whenever I get tired or whenever I get around friends or go home, it's all that same. I know whenever you and I get on the phone, the kids are always like, are you talking to Aunt Wendy? Every single time.
Well, you know, we bring it out in each other.
We do. I think it's a good thing, though.
It's not bad.
Not at all. Well, I am super excited to have you and Paul and Sarah and the whole Nashville crew joining us at Brighter Day.
We're happy to be here. Well, excited.
And I've told, and I'm going to tell the story again here today. I've told the clients that we're merging in on about how, you know, you and I met, and I think we've sorted it out about 22 years ago in the
October.
Right, yeah. In the October time frame. And that was right after I had passed the Tennessee bar.
Yep.
And moved to Nashville from Knoxville, where I went to law school. And we hit it off, like, right away. We both went to Austin Peay. Actually, Paul went to Austin Peay also. And I remember that the first day I met you, you decided that we were going to be friends, that you were going to be my mentor, and I was going to be your best friend.
Okay.
But you tell, I came to learn that you tell everybody that you're my new best friend. So, because you've never met a stranger. That's one of the things.
That's
like.
What they tell me.
Well,
I've
true.
Heard that before. My daughter doesn't like to go to the grocery store with me because of fearful I may bring someone home with us.
Well, but you do it all the time.
That's not true.
What is the truth, Wendy?
I strike up conversations with people in the grocery store line. And yes, there are times when I leave knowing their entire history. But, you know, that's not me. That's them.
But that's normally, then they're at your house. So how does
that happen? I don't know. That just happens.
I like
just
it.
Just one of those things.
I like it. So, you know, I've already had Paul on the show, and I've had Sarah on the show, and each of them were talking about you.
Oh, my.
They were. And in particular, Paul was mentioning how you guys had gotten into adoptions in particular. And I know that adoption holds a very special place in your heart.
It does. Well, backing up, I don't know where, I didn't hear, I have not heard his interview, so I don't know what all he told you. But
well, we've always talked about there are lies and there are damn lies.
No. I hope he got the story right. He wouldn't intentionally tell it to you wrong, but that doesn't mean he's not wrong.
He was not. Yeah, I was teasing. He was not wrong. He was very complimentary, and everything he said was absolutely true.
Well, he and I both worked for the Department of Children's Services out of college in Nashville. And Paul, I don't know if he told you, but he investigated child sexual abuse, and I worked in the foster care unit. Mm-hmm. And at that time, this was in the late 80s, like from 86. I think I was from 86 to 90, so I worked there about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
During that time span, we had a hiring freeze going on statewide because of a budget crisis.
Okay.
So there were tons of work and not enough people to do the work, and not enough foster parents, not enough anything. And I used to just be very vocal and complain all the time about the way things were handled. So when I left the department, and I was going to law school at night, Paul and I were both going to law school at night. When we left the department, we started getting phone calls saying, hey, you know, put your money where your mouth is. You guys had a lot of
things to
say and we'd like to see you do it better.
Right.
And I was like, I'm in law school. And then I was like, I'm studying for the bar exam. Well, you take the bar exam in July, but you don't get your results until October, right, as you well recall.
Mm-hmm.
So we had said after the bar, we'll consider it, you know, mm-hmm, we'll consider fostering. So August 1st, we get a phone call from a social worker for the department. It was like, we've got a child we want you to take. And we're like, I don't know if I've passed the bar yet. I mean, I can't commit myself. You don't understand the fear that the bar exam puts in you unless you've taken it, right, which, of course, you know.
Right.
And, of course, I passed it, but I didn't know that. And the three, you know, I left the bar saying, oh, yeah, I nailed this. And then right before the results came out, I was sure I'd flunked it. You know, that time's
been. Yeah, of course.
But anyway, I said no. And then they sent Paul pictures of this child, and he brought him home, and he said he was 10 years old. He'd been in foster care for 5 years at that point in time, and he'd been in 5 placements. And Paul said, you really going to say no
to this place?
I said, the only other bedroom in our house has all of my study materials on the floor. I mean, what if I flunk? I have to, what room am I going to put my study materials on? But yeah, he came home with us in August, and it was an experience. I mean, I wish that I had been more trauma informed at the time. And since then, I've made a point to educate myself about how trauma affects children's brains and growing and stuff, and how we can't react to trauma in children the same way. You can't parent a child who's gone through the things that my son had gone through the same way we would parent children that haven't experienced trauma. Right. It doesn't work. And there are reasons it doesn't work. Right. But at the time, I didn't know that, and the research wasn't there. But it was a journey. It was definitely a journey. And 2 years after he came into our home, we officially adopted him. And he's 41 now.
He is. I know.
He will be 41 on April the 7th.
That's right. So his birthday party's this weekend.
His birthday party is this weekend. And our youngest child, who is our biological and only daughter, will also has a birthday on the same day. We call them our bookend twins, and she will be 20 on April 7th. But as a result of everything we go through, people will say to me things like, I'm thinking about foster parenting, or I'm thinking about adoption. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have? And I'm like,
right.
There's no such thing as the grateful orphan. There's no such thing as little orphan Annie. It's hard. Mm-hmm. The more I know about trauma and how it affects brain development and the ability to have, you know, we use our frontal cortex for executive functioning and decision making. And children who have experienced trauma have a very difficult time doing that. And hormones that affect the brain, cortisol, it can cause all kinds of problems that look like ADHD and processing disorders and stuff.
Mm.
So when I say it's the toughest job you'll ever love, it is, but you have to know what you're getting into, because you can't just bring a child into your home and put cute clothes on them and give them a good school and expect their behavior to fall in line. It doesn't work that way. There's just too much that's happened in the interim, and you have to work with these kids consistently in order to help them build resiliency to the trauma that they've experienced. But when you do and you see that working, there's really not anything else like it. You know, it's a labor all of its own.
Right. Well, and you did that. I mean, you fostered. I mean, you were inside, you know, as a social worker, caseworker. Then you fostered and then you adopted. But now you help other people.
I do.
Who are in that space, and grandparents and
right.
people who, you know, are otherwise, you know, come into a child's life and who want to become their parent.
So in Nashville, I spent 15 years chairing the Foster Care Review Board in Davidson County. A Foster Care Review Board, any child in Tennessee, any child who comes into state custody, their case has to be reviewed every 6 months by the judge or a panel of local people who volunteer to review cases. And so I was the chairman of one of those foster care review boards that would review cases every 6 months. And our board was dedicated to adoption. So all of the children that were that would come in front of that board, the goal for them was to be adopted out of foster care. They had already determined that returning to their parents was not going to be a viable option. So I did that. And then I also worked with the administrative offices of the court in Nashville, and I did that. We had a court improvement program statewide to teach attorneys in juvenile court how to be better advocates for parents and for children. And I traveled statewide and taught classes to those attorneys. And then most recently, within the last 8 years, I have been working and help with designing a program with Family and Children's Services, which is a local nonprofit. And Family and Children's Services has a DCS grant that they use to provide services and case management to relatives who are caring for children. And we have designed a pathway to permanency for those parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles who are relatives to adopt these children so that they can remain in the home and have permanency, know that they're not going anywhere else, know that they now can put down roots because their circumstances or their situation is not temporary, it's permanent. This is my forever family. And it's a family that I know and I'm familiar with, and in a community that I know and I'm familiar with. So I do that. I have several cases now that I've kind of developed a practice where people who are foster parents end up calling me and asking me to help them with an adoption because the department currently, and I think this is a national problem, but in Tennessee in particular, we have staffing shortages and kids aren't getting served. And so kids may languish in foster care for 2 or 3 years because the department can't get around to terminating parental rights and allowing foster parents to adopt. So I take it out of the department's hands and I'll file a petition for termination of parental rights and adoption on behalf of the foster parents against the biological parents. So I have several cases where I'm doing that. And all of this that I'm saying comes from my belief that we would do much better to invest in kids and help them learn resiliency from trauma than to build prisons. Because when you look at the prison population, 75% of the men who are in prison have come from broken homes, have abuse, have those kinds of things in their history. And I would much rather deal with that on the front end than to pay to house these people on the back end. I'm a very firm believer that we find healing through positive relationships. Absolutely. And the science backs it up. It's not just my belief, but we find healing for life's trauma through healing relationships. And children need to know that they have a place where they can put down roots so that they can sprout wings.
You're listening to Another Brighter Day in the Neighborhood episode. Today, our very special guest is Wendy Rutherford. I'm your host, Angela Jones, and just want to thank you for joining us. So speaking of healing relationships, I'm going to circle back to, you know, how you pick up everybody in the grocery store and everywhere else and how we first met. Because literally, you know, when I first met you, we had, you know, relocated to Nashville. And, you know, you really did. You met me and were like, you're my new best friend. And now we're going to do this. And I didn't really know a lot of people at all. And it was based upon that relationship, which I think very much, not so much informed, you know, me going to law school because I'd already done that. But in terms of the trajectory of my legal practice, certainly the trajectory of what happened in my family from that point forward. And we'll get into how you talked me into having more children at some point in time.
I think it was the stay. You did that part on your own. I just said you needed to come home and take care of them.
Stay at home mom, maybe. But, you know, but that I think that's very true because, you know, I personally came from, you know, a very trauma-informed background and broken home. I didn't ever meet my father. He died. My biological father, he died before I was born, or actually not after I was born, but he was out of my mother's life before I was born. And then, you know, my mom had, you know, a couple of marriages before I settled into being raised by my stepdad, who was 17 years older than me. And I mean, he was a wonderful guy, but, you know, he was only 17 years older than me when he became my dad. And so there's the upsides and downside that go with a guy taking on, you know, a ready-made family at such a young age. And it really was, you know, being brought into relationship with not just you, but your whole family, and you and Paul becoming...
Stop. Well, that's why my children call you Aunt Angel and your children call me Aunt Wendy, because we have been family pretty much since we met. And that's a good thing. And what's really cool about that, I'm hijacking the show.
It's fine.
You know,
it's
what's fun. Really cool about that is now we're also going to be working together.
I know. That's what I'm most excited about.
It's going to be fun. I mean, we're bringing together two law practices, two heritages, two legacies, and we're merging it. And it's we're gonna kick ass. Can I say that on the radio?
They may edit it out. I don't know.
It's going to be awesome.
I mean, it really is something. So let's talk more about that whole legacy, because, you know, we got into it with Paul just a little bit about, you know, how long the Rutherford family has been practicing law in Tennessee.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, I married into this family. And what's interesting, I don't know if Paul told you how much older his father was. His father was 52 when he was born. Mm. And when I met his dad, he was, you know, in his 70s. And he was born in 1908. So he's,
wow.
This were older. But he would come in. We were in college, and he would come in from work, and he would look at me and he would say, "Don't ever be a female lawyer."
What?
And I, at that point in time, I was not planning to go to law school.
Right.
I wasn't planning to. And he would tell me how terrible female lawyers were, because they were all emotional. You know, they cry on the radio. They cry on the radio. They're emotional. They're not logical. They're not people that, you know, they're not folks. They don't think with their brains, you know, they're just too emotional. And he disliked
working
with them.
I will say he's much more woke now.
Yeah.
So you've spent some time.
Well, this is Paul's dad, not Paul.
This is
Paul's dad.
Well,
she used to tell me that. Yeah,
that.
Well, no. This is Paul's dad would tell me that. And I would just look at Paul like, one, I'm not planning to go to law school. That sounds like a terrible use of my time. And I was at that point in time, I was actually considering not finishing college.
Wow.
Because I just was not a good student. I love learning. I love everything that goes
right.
with learning. I hate being a student. But anyway, his dad would tell me that. And I really feel like, looking back, it was kind of prophetic. I think he knew, because he died before Paul and I got married, and he died before we graduated from college and before either of us decided to go to law school. So
right.
he didn't know that when he was here walking on earth. But for some reason, he would just come in and tell me that. But I took that to mean to approach situations from a real logical standpoint and from a measured standpoint and stuff. And I can still hear his voice. Don't be this shrill, screeching kind of an advocate. And I feel like I'm not. I feel like I've taken those things to heart. But when I got married and I became a Rutherford, people would come out of the woodwork and say, "Are you related to the lawyer Rutherfords?" Mm-hmm. And I would explain my connection. And I just recently took on a client who called and said, Dave Rutherford was my first lawyer, and that was my husband's uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had Robert, and Robert's retired. So now I want you. Will you be my lawyer? And I was like, I said, absolutely. And she said, I won't have a lawyer that's not a Rutherford. You know, so there's that history in the community of them, of the relatives that have practiced, and the stories of how they've helped people and the things that they've done. I mean, it's a proud legacy, and I am very proud to be a Rutherford in Nashville. I mean, I married into the family, but I feel like I understand the tradition and that I'm carrying on it mm-hmm. with, I don't think I'm that lady lawyer that my father-in-law did not want me to be. I think he.
Well, and we've got, I think one of your, at least one of your sons is looking at law school now, yep. maybe two.
My son Noah graduated from college in May of 21, and he has taken the LSAT and is applying to law school now. Mm-hmm. He's not sure where he's going to go. My son Samuel, who is older and had gone a different direction, has gone back to school and is saying that he's going to pursue law school when he finishes mm-hmm. his current degree. My daughter studying journalism, I think of those three, she would probably be the best lawyer, but I'm not sure what she's going to do. She's studying journalism. She's going to approach the world with a pen.
Yes.
Make a difference with her pen.
Well, and I think it's that legacy that I love, and, you know, especially the legacy of, you know, being sort of the family lawyer for life, like to be able to come alongside people, you know, at various points in time. I think Paul had mentioned to me at one point about there being, you know, four or five intersections that, you know, lawyers will often come into, you know, to the lives of people, families, you know, be it if somebody gets in trouble, if you have, you know, if there's a divorce or if there's a custody issue, but also for estate planning, for probate, in, you know, I would, you know, car accidents or what have you, or even, you know, bankruptcies, things along that line. And I think where yours and my callings really intersect is understanding the impact that the work that we do has on children involved in the situation. And I would even say, you know, like even with a probate matter, it's like, you know, they're adult children, but, you know, how a probate matter, or how estate planning is handled, or how a probate matter is ultimately handled can have, you know, repercussions for generations.
It does. And actually, when we're doing an adoption, a non-relative adoption mm-hmm. in Tennessee, you're required to have a home study done by a licensed child placing agency. And that agency is in the home for a while the child's placed there. Mm-hmm. But one of the aspects of the educational part of the placement is what happens if something happens to you? Mm. Where would this child go? Mm-hmm. And they do talk in terms of estate planning. And so in conjunction with a lot of the mm-hmm. adoptions that I do, we do wills.
Right.
We do wills with trusts for minors. We do wills that appoint guardians for children in the event of a simultaneous death mm-hmm. of adoptive parents.
Right.
And most parents don't think about those things just because it's not brought to their attention, but because right. of the adoption process, it's something that they're forced to deal with as part of their home study process. Yeah. You have to have a plan for what will happen next.
And military families are as well. Like the military requires, you know, for you to have a care plan, for the right. service member to have a care plan, and they'll sit them down and make sure that they've got the powers of attorney and the wills and what have you. And I think that's one area where we always think, you know, maybe when we're young, maybe because the tyranny of the urgent, you can think about it later, yeah. but it's such an important thing and something that, you know, is actually taken care of relatively easily.
It is a kind thing to do. Yeah. And I do a lot of educational, you know, just talking to people about the process and what to expect. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't going to have $1 million estates or $10 million estates. Mm-hmm. They're going to have simple things.
Right.
But there still needs to be a plan, and there still needs to be a plan for your children. And it's a very kind thing to do, and it actually saves you money in the long run to plan ahead and not leave it up to the courts to make these decisions and to think ahead about who is the best person for this and to talk to them.
Right, right.
That's a very important part. No, but people don't like to talk about death. It's just one of those things.
And you know what's really kind of funny? People, you know, we've always joked, you know, there's few things you can avoid, you know, death and taxes being at the top of the list. But it is, you know, unfortunately, death is the app. You can avoid taxes. Some people do.
Well, you know, I've heard a president of ours has quite successful at that. I don't know. That's what they tell me.
That's what I had heard.
That's what I had heard. I read that in the New York Times.
There you go. But I just want to thank you so much for joining us here, you know, today, but more so for your coming in to Brighter Day. We're really looking forward to, you know, having you, your expertise, your years of training, you know, making us better lawyers, better capable and effective at providing very high quality services to people in their family matters. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we were kind of joking around about it, you know, slogans and different kind of things, but it's family matters that
we handle your family matters because your family matters.
That's right. But it's true.
It is true.
Your family matters are really what matters.
There's really little else in the world that matters much more than your, I can't think of anything. I mean, it's, when you boil it down, You've got God and you've got family.
That's right.
And you're my family.
I know. I know.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us for another Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. You can find us here every week at this same time and station. And we look forward to having you with us next week or as soon as you can catch up with us again. Until then, enjoy brighter days.